Welcome to Write Your Book in a Flash with Dan Janelle, the only podcast where you'll learn how successful people just like you have grown their businesses, expanded their influence, and made more money by writing a book. On each episode, you'll learn the inside secrets to help you create a book that can serve as a powerful marketing tool to skyrocket your business. I'm your host, Dan Janelle. I help thought leaders, business executives, and entrepreneurs write their books. To find out more, go to writeyourbookinaflash.com.
A book can always be made better with good research. But what do you do? What are the do's? What are the don'ts? What are the inside tips from people who do research for a living? Hi, I'm Dan Janelle. I'm a book coach, developmental editor, and ghostwriter. And no matter where you are in the writing process, I can help you write the book. But today, let's dive right in. Patrice Perkins is an excellent ghostwriter. She can show you lots of ways that she uses research to write her books. Let's welcome Patrice. Who in particular would benefit most from this kind of information, and what kind of book would they be writing with it?
So I think it's great for a ghostwriter, certainly, you know, and I say that because some of the conversations that we've even had about the perspective, I think, was it Ann Janzer that you had on, the perspective of where you're writing from. I always thought I'm wanting to capture the voice of that individual, that principal that I'm writing about. But I think she kind of, suggested that's not necessarily the case. You don't necessarily want it to sound exactly like that person. I think that this research is going to be, this type of format that I use for researching for my interviews for the shows that I'm going to do. I do it for books. I'm always researching. It's something that's very present for me. So I don't think it's a particular type of book. I think actually, even as I think about fiction, it could, because I do write some flash fiction, and I have used some of not the business particular pieces, but I have certainly used some of this style of research for some of my fiction as well. Hey, everyone. I'm just excited to be here. My name is Patrice Perkins. I am the CEO and Chief Wordologist for The Word Architect. And today we're going to chat just a little bit about some research topics, some things that you may know, but also what I like to call a few hidden gems for research. So I've got a presentation. I'm going to jump right in, share my screen. Research gems for authors and ghostwriters. When it comes to, and this is kind of geared for us as writers, as editors, as looking for information to kind of get started with our projects, or maybe we're in the midst of our projects and we're not quite sure where to go. And like many things, and this is certainly something that I know from being an interviewer as well, great research starts with great questions. And so the questions really are going to take you, as we are learning, Dan, you've been talking with us some about some of the AI, like quick write. And so really the prompt or the question that you're thoughtful about, that you're pondering, is going to have a great deal to do with the response that you're going to get. And it's the same with research. So some of the questions to ponder, what is the book's purpose? Is it a fiction book? Is it a nonfiction book? If you're doing a ghostwriting project, does your principal, I'm going to call him a principal, does your principal know where that is, or are you needing to guide them some of the way? And the next thing I always think about is, you know, once you have a kind of sense of the purpose of the book, then what do you already know? What information do you already have about the topic? And that is both information that you are gaining from your client, or if you're writing for yourself, what do you know about the topic? And kind of get those things out. However you're getting them. I love a format like this where you're able to have a conversation and record. I love Zoom for this. So Zoom is great because it allows me to be in the conversation and not worry so much about, I'm still taking notes, but I'm really able to engage in that conversation. So once you kind of know the purpose, once you know what the topic is, and you want to begin to say, okay, this is what I know. So based on the outcome that I'm trying to get to, what is missing? Do I have an idea? Sometimes we say you don't know what you don't know, but sometimes you do know what you don't know. And so think about those things that are missing. Think about the knowledge gaps. And I wanted to talk about, I say, a few oblique ways to gather intel. And someone's looking at this slide and they're saying, Google. Well, I mean, what's oblique about Google? I always start with Google. I start with the person's name, because very often you can find some information. It's not always on page one either. Sometimes you want to go below the fold, so to speak. You want to scroll down and see what's not necessarily on page one. You can find a ton of information out about a person. Sometimes it'll be business or professional information. Sometimes it's personal information. And by personal, I don't mean, expose personal, but it could be give you some jump off ideas that you might not have thought about. Email is awesome, especially if you have their business email is a great place to start. But if you don't have their business email, and I'll talk a little bit about LinkedIn, but if you can get their personal email, especially if it's like a Gmail or an AOL, when you put that into Google, often what you'll find is places that they sign up for things. So you may find a group that they belong to. You may find an organization. So it's a great way to find kind of oblique information that might not come up if you only are going by searching for their professional information. And the professional information is often another great jump off place. When we think of LinkedIn, often we think of we'll put someone's name in the search box. Their profile will roll down. You can get an idea of the types of things that they're talking about. My first thing when I look at LinkedIn is, are they serving up original information? Are they creating posts or are they reposting? If you have someone that's primarily reposting, what are they talking about? What's the subject matter? Where are they kind of leading? What are the types of topics that they're primarily sticking with? If it's sort of a catch-as-catch-can and they're kind of pulling reposting from a lot of information, is there a theme that you can kind of gather? Another great piece on LinkedIn is who's interacting with their post, whether it's a repost or whether it's original content. If you look at the kind of, not so much a, oh, thanks, that was great, but someone who's taking the time to put in a sentence or two that is relevant to what the post is about is helpful in a few ways. What's their title? What's their industry? Is it a personal contact? Is it a professional contact? And each of those can give you jump off places. I'll often click on, I'm researching someone. I'll also click on, oh, this person, as I scroll down, I see three or four times that they've commented, they're engaged, and is the principal engaging back with this person? Do they have kind of a dialogue? What are they talking about? Is there a theme in that as well? In terms of gaining ways to reach that person, not reaching out to them, but how are they making themselves available? If you look at their LinkedIn, in the contact information on the LinkedIn profile, sometimes people don't have anything. It'll just be the link to for their LinkedIn profile. But sometimes you can hit a jackpot there. They may have a website. They may have a link for a link tree, which is really neat, because if you're familiar with a link tree, it not only gives you, if you have someone especially that has information or moves in a few different verticals that don't necessarily go together. So if you were to look at their website and all of these things were listed, it might be a little confusing. But a link tree is great because you can put the different quadrants that you're interested in. And as people are reading or interested in information about you, they can click on the thing that's relevant. And, they can click through the whole thing, but they can more easily get to the information that they're interested in. So that contact information on the profile, it might give you a website. It might give you, again, a personal email. It might give you a business email. So that's a great place. So don't just, when you're in that LinkedIn page, look at their, look in and see what groups are they involved in. What groups on LinkedIn? Who are speakers or influencers that they're interested? All of these are going to give you information and leads for that principal that you're initially talking to. Let's see. I'm going to keep going here. Financial information. I think I mentioned this a little bit when we had our last call. if they are affiliated with, especially if they're employed by a nonprofit, you can Google a 990 form. You can literally just put in the 990 form. And if they are high enough on the hierarchy, then often there will be salary information for maybe the first several people in the C-suite. I don't know if you have a C-suite in the nonprofit world, but those initial salaries, once you're in that 990, if you find them and they've got a pretty significant role, scroll through, see what other information you can find. That's also going to begin to flesh out that profile that you're building about that person. Government salaries. There's this website, https://govsalaries.com. Can I, if I click on this, will it allow me to go there, I wonder? I am not sure. But anyway, when you go to that website, what you're going to find is it is broken down by counties. It's broken down by states. It's broken down. It has universities. It has quite a lot of government salaries. So again, that is a place that makes a nice jump off to be able to get. And what I like to do this for, the particular time that I used it last, is how, when we're looking at how much we are charging, right, in gathering intel, the person that I was looking for worked for a nonprofit. I wanted to kind of get a sense of what kind of salary are they getting. Not to say that salary necessarily equates to their disposable income or the income that they're going to spend, but it could, right? So I figured that was a good place for me to jump off and get an idea of an arena of where I was, so I didn't ask for something so outrageously outside of. And again, I think the goal there, one of the things that we've talked about, is to ask for it, see if you can get a budget. If you can get a budget, that kind of gives you a better framework. But sometimes I found that I have not necessarily been able to get that answer, because especially if it's someone that's never worked, never done a project like this before, they don't have any idea. They're like, I'm not really sure. You know, give me a proposal. So that was good. I don't have this on here, but another great way to get information about your principal is: do they own a company? Do they have a business? Are they a leader or CEO of a company? Go into that website and look and see. I like to check the websites. I like to check the social media. Because if you go to the website, you're going to find out, and this is why, again, sidebar, why your brand and your culture should match what it is that you're trying to, the people that you're trying to reach. But you should be able to look at the website, get an idea of where they are, get an idea of who they're trying to reach, which also is helpful, because you can begin, if I'm researching and I see that they're talking, I don't know, to associations, mostly their messaging seems to be who they're, or maybe in the course of our interview, our discovery interview, they've talked about who that target audience is. I'm going to now go and search for associations to try and get an idea of what type of information are they putting out? Because if you can get a sense of the message, if you can get a sense of the content, that can help you decide how you are going to provide your own content. So websites are great. Social media is awesome in the sense that if they have a pretty consistent social media that's put out by the company, that is going to tell you who they're talking to for the most part. It should tell you who they're going to, but what are they saying about themselves? That is key. Learning how do they perceive themselves, or how do they want to be perceived by the public? That also can be very helpful information. Okay, how, once we have found some of these resources, what are some of those ways that we want to actually access them? With the principal, obviously that is going to be your first point of discovery. And so whether it's, even if I get, someone sends me some information, and one of the things that I like to do when I send my Calendly invitation, I love Calendly because you can really adjust that to who it is you're speaking to. I've got Calendly set up for different countries. I've got the UK. I've got, places that I've spoken, UK, Paris, I think the Netherlands, with those time zones that work for those people. And within those, if it's a discovery, I'm going to be asking some preliminary information to try to qualify. But I can just as easily change those, very easily go in there. You clone the particular event that, you know, that you like, and then change that question to begin to get some of that initial information that you want, so that by the time you are, you know, this calendar invite is for us to set up our discovery conversation or conversations, depending on how you're working. Answer some of these questions, and you can make the questions optional in Calendly, or you can make them required. And so I don't press too hard on the required information, because you're figuring you've got a certain level of buy-in if you've gotten to that point. But certainly ask some of those questions. Maybe 10 questions you can ask, and you can make them multiple choice. You can make them checkbox. You can make them, you know, the buttons where they can select. So you really, Calendly gives you a nice amount of options. So interviews, the interview with the principal, obviously going to be one of the first places that you start. As you're discovering through the research, who are other people that you may be encountering that it might make sense, with the permission of your principal, of course, to reach out to, especially if it's contacts that you've gotten, say, through, I think if you find someone through LinkedIn that's been commenting, I would always check to make sure, hey, I'm thinking about reaching out to this person. Is that okay? But it's pretty much open season, right? So you can then, reach out to that person on behalf. And again, with the interviews, it comes back to asking the right questions, and you get the right questions by spending time really being kind of thoughtful and pondering, where do I want to get to? And then moving back, what are the questions that are going to get me to that outcome? So, expert opinions. Again, that's going to be similar to, you know, doing the interviews. It makes me think about, we know that all sources are not necessarily reliable sources. We know that Wikipedia can be great to get a idea of something, but because it's open source, which means that anyone can, you know, jump in there and put whatever they want to be, you almost have to do sort of a balancing of, I'm going to get a little bit of information. I'm going to use, you know, Wikipedia to kind of give me a direction, but I'm probably not going to be citing Wikipedia for this particular project, but it can be a place to kind of use to gather. And then again, our own personal experiences can be it might not necessarily be something that we're going to put in the book or the article or whatever the content that we're writing, but it certainly can give us a framework and a place to think about how to move forward and how to approach. So our own, you know, the validity of our own experiences. It's my experience that in research that's allowing me to realize, hey, I kind of look at some things in a different sort of a way than might be the common way. So let's see what else we have. Okay. Again, some challenges in research. This really kind of is relating to what I talked about before. What's the source? What's the validity of the source? Where's that information coming from? Am I seeing a lot of bias and subjectivity? You know, I'm a journalist by trade. I'm an interviewer by trade. And when I learned, it was, here's one side of a story. Here's another side. And I am trusting my audience to have the discernment and the intelligence. I'm going to serve them both of those. I'm going to try not to color it with my own opinion, and then allow them to select the information. I've given them all the info that I can. That's not what we see necessarily in news. Today we see, you know, this is the view. This is the view. This is what it is. This is what we're only going to present this to you. This is what we want you to believe, and we're going to just keep repeating it, you know, hourly until we've impressed it upon you to the point where you believe that that is the only truth that there is. So as you're looking at your sources, I kind of say, go with your instincts. You know, I'm researching and I'm on a source, and maybe the first part of it is seemingly helpful. And then at some point, my spidey sense is kind of like, I'm not really sure. And so with Wikipedia, it can sometimes be good because you can then go down to the bottom of where they've gotten the sources that they're citing, and go there and see, is that a valid piece of information, or can I check this information? Can I check it another way from another source? Another great way of ethical considerations when conducting research, and this I think is particularly when we are writing a book with someone or about someone where there could be sensitive information, however that would be defined for you. And so you may uncover some information that is not common knowledge. And it you know, depending on, you know, maybe the principal has deliberately tried to keep that information not top of mind of people. So then we have a responsibility, I believe, as, you know, researchers, as writers, to bring that back and say, hey, here's this thing. We haven't talked about it. I found it out there in the world. How do you feel about this? Is this something that you want included? Is it something that you don't want included? Do you want to talk about it? And just kind of get a sense from your principal of how they feel about it. They might be like, oh my gosh, I forgot about that. That was so many years ago, but it's, you know, it's great. Yes, let's talk about it. Or where did you find that? Because I need to, you know, that is not something. And so, you know, being sensitive to our principal, being sensitive to the person that we're working with. Let's see, is there anything else I want to say about challenges? The only thing, another thing I might say is I love research. And sometimes you can kind of get into a rabbit trail. How far do you go? And I think part of that can be managed if we are going with that scope of initial questions that we have, going with that that outcome that we were hoping to reach. That can kind of help keep us reeled in. I have had occasions where I've been so fixated on accumulating the research and the information that it was almost unmanageable when I had it, because I had such a volume of information. So, you know, think about the scope of your project, the scope of where you want to go. Sometimes I've also had where I've gotten so much information that it almost could create another body, another topic. And when you bring that up, they're excited about the work that you're doing. And they're like, yeah, you know, let's move in that direction as well. So those, I'm sure there are some other research challenges. So, okay, here we are. Go for your obvious sources first. And then look outside the box. We know that we also have some, in terms of generating questions, generating ideas, we know that we now have the assistance of some like QuickWrite. I love QuickWrite, a tool that we can kind of put in a question, get a response, and then tweak that question to give you outlines, to give you topic matters. So look for those obvious things first. Google and LinkedIn are very obvious. And then Google, LinkedIn, the websites, social media about the principal that you're looking for. Think of oblique ways to use Google. Don't just, you know, search the name, search the email. If in that process, if I come up with an email that's in a company that I hadn't heard of before, I'm going to then Google that company to see what information that I can find. So that can, like I say, that can also always lead you to a place with more information. So obvious sources first, then look outside the box. And that is your hidden research gems for today.
Thanks, Patrice. That was wonderful. And thanks everyone for watching today. You can find more than 175 other videos on how to write and market your book in a flash on this YouTube channel. Check them out.
Thank you for listening to the Write Your Book in a Flash podcast with Dan Janelle, the only podcast that shows you exactly how people just like you have built their businesses by writing a book. If you'd like to write your book but don't know where to start, you can find great information at writeyourbookinaflash.com. If you're ready to take your next step to write the book that can transform your business, I invite you to schedule a free, no-obligation consulting call with me by going to writeyourbookinaflash.com. We'll be back next week with another insightful interview to help you become a top business leader.